the association, the Cocoa Beach, Cocoa Commercial Center Condominium, and terraces at Heritage Island Commons. We have some businesses that join. We have Custom Glass and Mirror, Pyramids Management Services, Belly Cleaning Services, Inspect and Save, Superior Surfaces of Central Florida, Bose Coating and Roofing, Vac and Jet Services, and Integrity Elevator. We also have one individual, a Miss Marlene Adams, that joined. Just for your information, the current directory, if we get new members that join after the printed publication goes out, the website directory is updated once a month, and you'll find all the new members listed in there, all the new businesses. That's the most current information. Otherwise, the printed directory only goes out twice a year. Regarding legislative information, there is a webinar on December 8th that's being given by Becker and Polyakov. If you're interested in joining that webinar, send me an email at rk-scca@cfl.rr.com, and I will send you the link to sign up for the webinar to find out what's going on if you're interested with the different legislations that are out there, the different bills that are out there. You can listen in. You don't have to participate, but it could be a great form of information for you. In January, our meeting of SCCA will be given by an organization that works with Becker and Polyakov called CALL, Community Association Lobby, Legislative Lobby. And what we're going to be doing is bringing in a number of their attorneys and hopefully the lobbyists for the state for the legislation. And that's going to be questions and answers only. So it's going to be a great place to dump your questions for any type of legislative issues, foreclosure issues, stuff that we need to get changed in the law that would help out. Help give us some relief in the community associations. The next President's Forum will be on December 12th at 10 a.m. We have one little public service announcement from Cape Canaveral. Starting January 2nd, 2010, Ridgewood Avenue is going to be undergoing major construction. So if you up in that area or you've got guests coming up in that area, you might want to avoid that if you can.
There's no President's Forum in December. They're waiting the December Forum. It'll be in January, the second Saturday in January.
I've just been corrected. The President's Forum is not going to be in December. It'll be in the second Saturday of January. Thank you, Beverly. Today we have Mr. Chuck Drago, who is the former secretary of the DBPR. Not a secretary like taking notes. He pretty much runs the organization. And he's been it for a few years, and he's very good at what he does. He has just been appointed the deputy chief of staff to Governor Chris. But he was responsible for the licensing, the regulating of all the businesses and the condominiums. And just condominiums alone is a very small part of what the DBPR does. He's going to be talking to us with regards to how the DBPR can help the condos and HOAs. And if you have questions for him, please get them to either one of the entrance tables or give them to me. If you can, put an email address at the bottom, and maybe if we can't get to him, maybe we can talk him into answering a couple of the special ones via email. At this time, I would like to introduce Mr. Chuck Drago.
Thank you. to you.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
A little technical difficulty. We have to get him dressed.
Very good.
Good. Do I don't need that. Do yes, you do.
No,
I need both.
That's what I
This is the beginning of the questions.
Oh, I got questions already?
When you get to it, okay.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It's really nice to be here, and I thank you so much for allowing me to come in and speak with you. It's always a pleasure to get out and meet with the folks that we serve, either through licensing, regulating, or whatever the case may be. And I will try my best to answer your questions. While I am not the condo expert, we have folks who are at DPPR, and I will do my best to answer your questions. If I can't answer it, I will guarantee you that I will go back and get an answer and forward them to you so that you get the answers and get the right answer. I don't want to guess at anything, but I'm here because I want to talk to you a little bit about DPPR. I think it's important whether how you're involved in condos, whether you live in a condo, you're a community manager, association manager, or whatever the case may be, it's important, I think, that you have a feel for what DPPR is, because I don't think most people understand what DPPR is or does or how they're involved. And really, the lack of ability to do a lot of things in terms of regulation licensing, especially in condominiums. They don't have as much authority as some people think that we have. But I just want to tell you a little bit about DPPR and kind of give you an idea of what we are and answer your questions in any way we can or get the answers for you. A little bit about myself. I am now the Deputy Chief of Staff for Governor Crist. And what that means is that you move from where you are, you move into the office with the governor, and then you're responsible for a group of agencies. Right now, I'm responsible for all the law enforcement agencies and DPPR. I really wanted to keep DPPR as one of my agencies to be responsible for, and the governor allowed me to do that. And it's a great honor to work for the governor. It's a great honor to work for this governor. He cares about the people. He legitimately does. It's not just talk. He legitimately does. And so I like working for somebody like that because I firmly believe that our job in state government is to serve the people. And so I think a lot like the governor, and so I enjoy working for him. But before that, I was the secretary of DPPR, and did that for about 2 years. And prior to that, I was the deputy secretary in DPPR over one side of it, and I'll explain a little bit about that so you have a better handle on how DPPR works. Before I was the deputy secretary of DPPR, I was a police chief in Oviedo, which is not too far from here, and did that for 3 years. And loved it. Prior to that, I spent 29 years as a police officer in Fort Lauderdale and retired as the assistant police chief in Fort Lauderdale. So most of my career was a cop. So my job was dealing with people. That's what you do as a cop. I know on the television shows that they're always shooting people and arresting people, and that is a part of what you do, but the basic job of a cop is working with the people. So I enjoyed it. I liked doing it. So I retired from Fort Lauderdale, and I got an opportunity to come to Oviedo and become the police chief. I grabbed it and really did enjoy it tremendously. It's a great town. And again, an opportunity to do community policing and working closely with people, which is what I enjoy doing. In fact, when I was in Fort Lauderdale, I spent a long period of time working in what is known as traditional organized crime, organized crime task force, which was the mafia, and working mafia cases between here and Philadelphia is mainly where I worked. Anybody from Philadelphia in here? One person? Here, Nicky Scarpo? Nicky Scarpo is a famous organized crime figure in Philadelphia, Atlantic City. Any of you might remember him. I spent 3 years of my life investigating Nicky Scarpo. So he's in federal prison today, and he spends 23 hours in jail cell and 1 hour out in the courtyard walking around. His advice to his son was, do not stay in the business. Get out before you have to end up living the life that I lived. And the son didn't listen, and a few months later he tried to take control of the family and was shot 9 times. Survived, but I think now the lesson sunk in. You know, any of us that have kids know that sometimes it takes a while for our kids to get the message, you know. Some learn harder than others, so anyway, I spent a long time doing that, and I mention that because it was one of the times in my career that I moved away from kind of a community policing deal. It really wasn't. You didn't do a lot of community policing when you worked organized crime investigations. But one thing I did learn during that period of time is, since I spent a lot of time working in the mafia and spent a lot of time in government, over the 33 years or so all told that I've been in government, I learned quickly that there's one way to tell the difference between the mafia and government. One of them's organized. So I bring that out to you so that you understand that we work very hard in government. We try very hard. Do we make mistakes? Yes. Can we do a better job in a lot of areas? Yes. But it is not from a lack of caring. I can tell you that throughout my career as a police officer and my time in DBPR and now in the governor's office, I've met and worked with more dedicated people than you can imagine, that you work so hard for the people at all levels, and the division of condominiums is the same way. People who really do care. We get wrapped up in bureaucracy very often in large agencies, but the people really do care. They just often don't have the tools. They just often don't have the procedures or don't have the resources to do a better job. But I just want to fight. If there's one message I can tell you, and it's not because now I'm a state worker or I've been in government, I can tell you that there's good and bad in everything naturally, but you've got great people in the state of Florida who work in these agencies, and I know in DBPR, that really do care about the people. They really, really do. So it is so important that we have relationships like this, partnerships, that we can share information and talk about things. We may not agree on everything, but the partnerships that help us. You guys help us. You guys tell us what you need. You help us understand what the problems are. The partnerships are so critical. I was telling Harry before that I started my new job this week in the governor's office. So I didn't know what my schedule was going to be like. And the governor's schedule changes hourly. So I didn't know if I was going to be able to make it here. I didn't know if I was going to be stuck in Tallahassee. The governor needed something. So I was really getting kind of nervous come around Tuesday whether I was going to get here. So I talked to the new secretary, who is the interim secretary right now of DBPR, is Charlie Lean. Charlie Lean used to be the chief of staff, which is the guy under the secretary in DBPR. The governor has moved him up on an interim basis right now as the secretary of DBPR. He's in a new job. He didn't know what his schedules and so forth were going to be. But we got together on Tuesday and said, listen, we've got to get to this meeting. We've got to be here. These partnerships are so important. So he agreed that if I, for some reason, got caught up and couldn't get out of the governor's office last night, or to be here this morning, he'd drive down to be here to do it. But the point I'm trying to make is, this is an important partnership and relationship, and it's important that we get here, and we really appreciate that we're invited to come. So we value these relationships and these partnerships. But let me just tell you a little bit about DBPR real quickly. DBPR is split into two sides, professions and business. That's why it's business professional regulation. We license and regulate over 1 million people. Everybody in this room, everybody you talk to in Florida, anybody you know is touched by DBPR. If you get your hair cut, DBPR. If you go to the veterinarian, it's DBPR. If you live in a condominium, it's DBPR. If you buy real estate through a real estate agent, it's DBPR. If you go and have a little bit of A little beard later on, DBPR. If you use tobacco, DBPR. If you go to a hotel, DBPR. If you go to a restaurant, DBPR. So DBPR touches everybody in the state. It takes in almost $1.5 billion in taxes and fees. $1.5 billion in taxes and fees every year that goes to regulating and licensing these professions and businesses. Some of it goes to general revenue and education and so forth. So the point is, it's a very big agency that touches a lot of people and does a lot of different things. On the business side of DBPR, you have four divisions, which is hotel, restaurants, alcoholic beverages and tobacco, condominiums, division of condominiums and land sales is called, and I'm forgetting one, paramutual wagering. So we also have all the paramutual wagering facilities in the state, racetracks, Hi-Li, all that, all the slot machine operations down in Broward and now in Dade County. It's all DBPR. On the profession side, it's all what we call the professions, which are real estate, community association managers, veterinarians, auctioneers, and on and on and on. There's 20 different boards that run those professions. So each profession has a board, and there's 20 different boards that runs that we deal with that run those different professions. So you can see there's a lot going on within DBPR, including the issues with condominiums. Our division of condominiums, some of you may know, is run by the director, Mike Cochran, who's in charge of that division. And he handles all the condominium stuff and is very familiar with it and very good at it, I believe. So that's kind of how it's broken down. Our big issues in DBPR in general over the last 3 years that I've been there have been trying to communicate better with people, with the people that we serve. What I mean by that is we have a very huge call center in DBPR. So if you were going to get a license or needed to get a license, is anybody here that has a license with DBPR? Okay, quite a few of you. And may have experienced some frustration, to say the least. I didn't ask if you did because I was afraid too many hands would come up. We realized when we first got in there that DBPR is a large bureaucracy. And it's easy to become a bureaucracy in state government because you get so big. And the only way you can get things done is you got to set up very structured systems, and you have to march a lot of things through it in order to make it happen. When you're licensing 1 million people, and you have millions of pieces of paper coming into an office every day, you've got to have set structures in order to make that happen. But what happens when you do that is you can become a bureaucracy where people just become paper handlers, and it just moves and moves and moves, and they don't have any understanding or compassion for the people that are on the other side. And what we've tried very hard to instill in our folks over the last 3 years is that our people have a direct influence and effect on the people that they serve. You know, when you work in a big bureaucracy shoveling a lot of papers every day, you don't really realize that you're affecting real people. That there's really human beings on the other side of those papers. It was a big issue to try to make police understand that as well when we're in the police department, because cops become so cynical that they think they don't really have an effect on crime, that they just go out and all they can do is just try to keep people from literally from killing each other every day, and that's about it. They don't understand that what they do will have a direct impact on the crime and on people's lives. So it's the same thing in this job. So we came in January of 2007, and we looked at some of the numbers, and we found out that if you called DBPR, especially at peak times when a lot of renewals were going on, you'd be put on hold for an average of about 35 minutes. That was average. And then it was set up in such a way that if you called into the wrong number, Q we call it, you were told to hang up and call again. So you had another 35 minutes. So you wonder why people might say, heck with it, I'm going to practice without a license. Because it's frustrating. So one of the first things we did was try to work in our call center. And we did a lot in there, but the bottom line is that now, at peak times, the average call waiting, and this is peak times means, again, like when all the realtors are renewing and things like that, when it's busy, our peak times now are less than 5 minutes. And our normal non-peak times is less than 2 minutes. And if you look at the gold standard around the United States for call centers of that size, it's under 5 minutes. If you can get a hold at major call centers in under 5 minutes, that's considered okay. That's good. Ours is under two minutes now, and it's getting so low that there's almost no holds. Most times, once you get through, it may take you a minute to get through all that. Dial one if you have to, I'll do. But once you get through all that, you shouldn't be on hold for very long and longer. That's just a major thing right there to help people to communicate easier. If you send in an email, you got a response in an average of 4 weeks. Just if you asked a question. Now it's the same day. You'll get an email back. If it's more complicated or technical and it has to be sent to someone who really has to investigate it a little bit, they'll at least let you know that they have to look into it a little bit. It may take longer. But the point I'm trying to make is we're trying to improve our communication skills better. And that was one of the first priorities of Governor Crist when he came in, as some of you may remember, was communication, transparency with people, and plain language. Rewriting all your stuff so that people understood what it meant. We would send forms out to people that I didn't even understand what they were asking. It was so much wrapped up in legalese that no one really knew what they were even asking. It was so confusing. So last year, Governor Crist came to me and said, I need you to find ways to stimulate business in the state of Florida. Business is our middle name, obviously. So he wanted us to find ways to accelerate Florida, is what he called it. Find ways to stimulate business within the state by making things easier for people to get licensed and get their businesses open. And by that, I don't mean lowering standards so anybody can get a license. Public safety is the paramount concern for us. But once you've achieved public safety and the people are safe, why do you have to burden them with so much more paperwork and processes that makes it so difficult to get their license? So we ran with that, and we started looking into ways to streamline and cut red tape in the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. And any of you that have licenses with the department, I don't know if you've renewed since or have had better experiences than you did before. I hope you have. I think you will in most cases. It's really starting to hit now. We're really seeing changes in the agency now. But what we did was I realized that people can't come up to Tallahassee and sit and talk to the secretary and tell me how messed up things are. You know, if you own a restaurant or you have some business in Miami, you can't close it and come up to Tallahassee and meet with me. If you have lobbyists or something like that, yeah, you can do it, but the regular people can't do it. So we set up what we call On the Road to Better Business, where we went out and met with people around the state and allowed them to come in and set up office hours to come in and meet with me and tell me what the issues were with our department and how we can make it run better. And I can tell you, we didn't know how many people were going to come, if I was going to sit there with my feet up on the desk doing nothing, or if we were going to get a lot of people. Well, I'm telling you, we got slammed. People waited over an hour to come in. It was packed. And they weren't there to tell me how great I was. They were there to tell me how bad things were. And it's my fault. I'm the head of the agency. It's my fault. There's nobody I can blame it on. They came in to tell me how bad things were. But from that, they didn't just come in to gripe. They came in to say, you've got problems in this area, that area, and this is how you can fix it. And we took a lot of those suggestions, and we've gone back and we've changed them since, made things a little better, made things easier, streamlining our process and cutting that red tape and removing burdens. And my goal, which was a little bit maybe far-fetched, was that I wanted people to come in and apply for a license in a department, and when they're done, say, man, that was the most fun I've had in a long time. I don't think I'm ever going to reach that point, but if we can get somewhere where it's kind of neutral, where they did it, and say, oh, that was okay, that was no big deal. That'll be good. But I would love to have people, you know, say, but that was so easy, it was actually fun. But we may never get there, but we're going to get a heck of a lot closer to it than we are now. So as a result of those meetings, we made a lot of changes, and we started a process internally that's important, especially people who have licenses, that we call Easy Apply, which is where we have taken every single one of our application processes. And like I said, I started to mention all the different professions we have and businesses. Everyone has a different application, different process, and we're looking at every single one of them and changing them and revamping them and cutting out everything that isn't necessary. And we launched the first ones this month for real estate. And I think when people start filling out their real estate applications after this, they're going to see a big difference, where it's a lot easier and simpler to do. And why is that an issue? Why does that matter to people? Why does that matter to you? Why does that matter to anybody in this state? Because it's getting people licensed and on opening their businesses quicker and easier. And why does that matter? Because businesses mean jobs, and jobs mean spending, and spending means more money for revenue, and that means more money for public safety, education, and on and on and on. We're all wrapped in this together. We're all in this together, whether we're a licensee or not. If somebody can't get their business open because it takes 6 months to get a license, that business can't hire people. They can't put people to work. That means more people are unemployed. That means there's more people collecting unemployment, and on and on and on. So it has a direct impact on what goes on in this state, and it helps the businesses get open so much quicker. When I was meeting with the folks in our meetings, I had a guy come in to me. His name was Scott. He called himself Scott the Plumber. No relation to Joe the Plumber in those days. But Scott the Plumber really helped me look in the eye of someone who's out there dealing with DBPR, who was so frustrated and almost could not open his business because of the way we did things. Scott the Plumber didn't graduate from high school, got his GED, and went to work as a plumber's helper, and did that for several years, and worked 14 hours a day at it, and at night studied for the contractor's exam, and did it for years. Finally felt he was prepared, he took the test, he failed it. Took the test again, he failed it. Took the test again, and he passed it. He passed, he's going to get his contractor's license. He's going to open a business. He's going to bring people to work for him. It's a great thing for the state. All he has to do is get his license. That's the hardest part. That shouldn't be the hardest part. So he went and filled all the paperwork out and started the process to get his license and waited for the license to show up, went out to his mailbox every day, hoping that license was going to be in there because he's going to start his whole new life. No license, no license, no license. Finally, he gets a notice from DBPR that he left some stuff out on his paperwork and has to fill it out and send it back in. He did that, sent it back in, and waited and waited and waited. Weeks later, he got another notice that he made another mistake. He waited for months, running to his mailbox every day. That really hits you when you run an organization like that and you realize that's the effect we have on people. Their whole life depends on that piece of paper. And you can't treat it just like a piece of paper. So Scott has been my poster boy ever since. I just got an email from Scott the other day. He's doing real well. He communicates with me on a regular basis. I hadn't heard from him in a few months. He emailed me to congratulate me on my new job. He's now going for his fourth contractor's license. He's like my advisor. He emails me and says, you got a problem here, this is bad, that's bad, and so on. So I've learned a lot from him, and I think he is the poster boy of what we do to people in this kind of a process. So we have done a lot to try to change that, to make that so people can get their licenses open quicker and easier. And I tell you all this because while we worked hard and made a lot of changes, we have a lot more to do. We know that. We're far from perfect in a lot of areas, but we care, and we're trying to make it better. We realized that we had such strict processes that our people couldn't change the process to help somebody. And by that I mean, if a restaurant called up and said, I made a mistake. I forgot to fill out a piece of paper, and I can't get my inspection to open my restaurant, and I'm supposed to open Saturday. I have all my employees hired and all my food bought. If I can't get my license, the inspection, my license in the next 2 days, I'm going to have to close my business before I can even open. I'm going to lose all my food, and my employees are going to leave, and they're not going to have work. And you know what we told them? Tough. Get online. We'll get to you a week from Thursday. You know, this is how bureaucracies work. And that's not the people's fault who do this, because the people who work in these agencies are hardworking people. They weren't allowed to do it. They couldn't just change things on their own. There were processes. So we started something called Save the Day. And it requires every division director, including condominiums and every single division, to change procedures and set up processes so that if something like that happens, anybody can change it, pull that person's application out, get them inspected the next day, and get them open. Do not let businesses close because of paperwork. So they do that now. Some of you may know that in the auto industry, they used to, the cars are going down assembly lines, and nobody can stop that assembly line. Because it costs big money to stop that assembly line. So if there's a mirror hanging off the side or whatever, that went through, and it went to the dealer, and the dealer had to fix it or whatever, and it cost more money in the long run. Companies with Toyota many years ago said, this is not going to happen. Everybody on that assembly line is going to be empowered to stop it if they need to. Now, there'll be procedures for doing that. Everybody just can't be pushing a button, stopping an assembly line. But when under these conditions, when you see something, anybody can stop that assembly line. And that's what we're trying to do in DB Garden has started, and it's been tremendous success to helping people get their licenses and so forth. I talk about that we license a lot of people, and one of them is engineers. And I like to tell a little joke about the engineers, but the lawyers get mad at me because it's a little bit of a slam on the lawyers. So I apologize to the lawyers in the room beforehand, but it's because it's about engineers. It's about an engineer who passed away and went to heaven, and for some reason got thrown down into hell. And he was down there with the devil and said, well, I don't belong here, I don't think. But since I'm here, I'm going to make things better. So the engineer set up air conditioning systems and designed better rooms for them all and made the place just wonderful. And a guy came down and said to the devil, how'd you get all this stuff, man? He said, it's the engineer. He says, well, you're not supposed to have any engineers down here. Engineers are all supposed to go to heaven. He says, well, you're not getting them. We're keeping them down here. And God said to the devil, well, I'm going to sue you. And the devil laughs and says, yeah, well, you got to get a lawyer. Sorry, Larry. It's just really for the engineers, not against the lawyers. One last thing we're trying to do, I think that's important to mention, in BBPR is improve our website. And I know there's probably been a lot of frustration in this room as well in terms of trying to figure out, learn things. We're trying to make it better. We all are in the same business, I think, in terms of trying to educate people. That's what you guys do. That's what we try to do. We'd like to hear ideas about how we might educate people better. We're trying to improve our website. We're trying to improve the educational materials that we have. We've got CDs that will have information and so forth. But we'd love to have ideas on how we could help educate people better. One of the things we deal with a lot in DBPR is unlicensed activity in the various professions that we have. And you folks are more often than not the consumer who might be the victim of the unlicensed activity. So we realize that in order to fight unlicensed activity, and that's the number one issue that I hear from our professionals today, especially construction contractors. They're going out of businesses dropping out like flies. And one of the biggest problems they're having is unlicensed contractors taking their business. because so many folks have been laid off from their corporate job, perhaps. They're handy. They go out and say, I got to make a living. They go out and they do some handy work, and it's illegal. It's unlicensed activity. And what does that do? It undercuts the licensed guy, and he's hurting already, and it puts him out of business. That's one of the things that are killing our licensees, construction, especially when it's all across the board in all the professions, right now. And how do you guys play into that? As a consumer, you're more often than not the victim, which means you need to have a better understanding of when is a license needed and when isn't it. When do you have to have a licensed person do something around your property or wherever the case may be? And that's not easy to know. It's very confusing. And I'll tell you, I was going to put pavers in my driveway in front of my house, and I thought, do I need a license contractor to put pavers down? It's probably not a good idea for the secretary of DPPR to hire unlicensed people. That would be a great article for the governor to read. But I said, well, I guess I'll go look on my website for DBPR because they'll probably tell me. Just tell me. I had no idea. They didn't say. Well, how do you folks know? How do you find out? How do you know? If someone says, if you want to do some kind of work or whatever it might be, how do you know whether you need a licensed person? Does anybody know if you go and get your hair cut, does a person have to have a license?
Yes.
And how do you know if they have a license? Posted, exactly right. I didn't know that before I went to DVPR. I knew they needed a license. I didn't know they had to have it posted. I knew they had to have their picture on it. You know, it's, I don't know. I didn't know. I don't know. In contracting, I don't know when you need to have a licensed guy to do contracting. So it turns out you don't need it for papers. I didn't know that. So there was no way to know. So we changed our website. In fact, the folks called it the Paper Project because I asked them to fix it. And now you can go on the website and see, well, let's say I'm going to get some work, I'm going to get my hair cut, whatever it is, I'm going to a veterinarian, or does he need a license or she need a license? You can go on there and it'll tell you where you need a license and when you don't need a license. So that if you want to hire someone who's right, who's licensed, insured, and the whole thing, it will tell you what you need. And then what is a license and what does that mean? If they're licensed, there's local licenses, state licenses. What does a contractor need? So it's a very, very confusing situation for all of us. So we're trying to do a better job on the website to educate everybody, consumers. Consumers are our partners in this. We need you to help us stop unlicensed activity because you're the ones that are buying it. So if you're educated and know what to do, you can stop it. If you don't know what to do, how can you help us stop it? So we're trying to do more of that in all areas across the board to get a better understanding of it. So that's basically DBPR, which is what I wanted to talk about, and I'm going to try to answer some of these questions. I think it's important to have a good background on what DBPR is about and what it does, so you can kind of conceptualize it when you hear about us, and then where the Division of Condominiums falls into the middle of all that. So do you want me to try to answer some of these questions now? Okay, I'm going to try. Oh my goodness. A lot of words in this one. Okay, let's see what we got here. Is there an easy one in here? Some of these I'm just not going to be able to answer, to be honest with you. They're too technical for me. Yeah, they're very specific and very technical. Why don't I do this? Is anybody kind of easy one?
I do.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. We want to know if the department has any publications containing guidelines through bylaws, proxies, declarations, candidates, nomination papers, etc., or financial records to guide newly formed condominiums.
To guide newly formed condominiums?
Maybe newly incorporated.
Oh.
Here it is.
You read it.
I'm sorry.
Does the department have any publications containing guidelines for bylaws, proxies, declarations, candidates, nomination papers, or financial records to guide newly formed condominiums? They do. I think it covers all those areas there. We'll have to try to make sure we can get it. Do you know, Marion? Newly formed, or just after turnover?
We've been an association for quite a while, but we're going to get incorporated now. But we need the paperwork to fulfill the candidate election, president's election, that type of thing.
You should have been incorporated long ago.
Well, I know that.
And somebody
take rule of
doing
the monitoring?
No thought.
I've got one here I can answer. Do I have to hire a licensed contractor to tile the floor of my condo? There's no reference to this in the documents, thanks. Unless there's something particular to the condominium, you don't have to have a license to tile. But unless there's something in your docs that say, you have to use certain people or whatever. But
license and insurance always go hand in hand. The insurance part.
Let me see if I can explain that a little bit. There's two types of license, especially when you're dealing with contractors. Construction type stuff, work around the house. If it's any kind of structural thing, building walls or anything like that, it's going to require a licensed person, a contractor. And for someone to take your money and agree to do a deal to do that kind of work is contracting. I mean, that's as simple as it is. And so they have to have a license. And there's a lot of different kinds of licenses, but there's two major differences. One is there's a local license in many counties that are issued to the various construction professions. But when we talk about license, we're talking about a state license. And in order to be a contractor in this state, you have to have a state license. So there can be a lot of confusion where unlicensed folks will say, oh, I'm licensed, because they have a tax certificate from the county they live in, which is basically what it is. Or they may have a specialty license of some type from the county they're in. But they need, if they're going to be contractors, they're going to need to have a state license, which is a license from the state of Florida, from the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. And that's why it can get so confusing. But if it's a contractor, if you're hiring someone to do some construction or put in a pool or work on anything in your condo that's construction related, they're going to have a state license. And when everything that they have, their advertising, their flyers, their truck, whatever it may be, has to have a number, license number on it. It's a violation of state law just to not even have that number. So you can ask to see their state number, and they have to have it on everything. So that's one way to know if they have a state license. And then you can go to our website, put their name in. It'll prompt you. Put their name in, and they'll tell you if they have a license and what kind of license they have.
What about insurance?
If they're licensed by the state of Florida, they have all the necessary insurance. Now, when someone says who is not licensed by the state and says they're insured, it could mean a lot of things. It could mean a lot of different things. But the proper insurance that you care about, insurance on their employees, things like that, so that you're not sued over anybody that gets injured and so forth, they have to be licensed by the state. That's why, you wonder, why do I care if someone's licensed? If I know Joe down the street or a guy's referred to me who's pretty handy with a hammer and can do it, why do I care? Well, and Joe may be fine. Joe may come over and do a fine job and not cheat or any other anything else and move on and do a fine job. The difference is you're taking a risk because there's no regulation over him. He has nothing to lose other than getting caught for unlicensed activity, which is a criminal offense, by the way. It's not just an administrative thing. It's a criminal offense. They go to jail for it. But the licensed person has had to prove that he's financially stable, that he's passed the test and is qualified to do the work he's talking about, that his employees and he are insured properly so you don't get sued if something happens. And if he does a bad job or tries to rip you off, and you know, there could be a licensed guy who's less than honest too, and does do something improper with you, you at least have some resources. One is a cost recovery fund with the state that will reimburse you to some degree. But I will say the cost of recovery fund right now is broke. But hopefully in years to come it'll be back up again. But right now it's broke. But the cost recovery fund is set so that you can be reimbursed for some of the money you may lose. That's only if you use a licensed contract. You use an unlicensed guy, you're on your own. The other thing is he has to be held responsible by the board, the construction board, which means they can pull his license, they can fine him, and they do thousands of dollars. They can do a lot of things to him or her. So that means he's got a lot to lose. The other guy who's not licensed doesn't have as much to lose. So you may pay a little bit more for the licensed guy, which you probably will because he's got a lot more expenses. But you have a lot more protection, too, when you do your when you have the work done. Yes, sir.
Could you just talk about the responsibilities and services offered by the condo section?
The Division of Condominiums, as you know, is, we have the office in Tallahassee. We have the office, we have offices in Orlando and in Fort Lauderdale. And their main responsibility is financial situations, records, laws, as the laws pertain to those issues. Are always willing to investigate any allegations, complaints that you may have. But I think the biggest area of concern or rub that we get with folks is that most people expect, or there's a level of expectation that we can do more than we can. And I want you to understand that it's limited in what we can do. I think the law is designed to allow you to run your organization, your condominium complex, whatever it might be, the way you want to, as long as somebody isn't committing some type of fraud or theft or criminal activities. Other than that, it's designed for your board to kind of run things as they see fit, as long as it's legal. And we get a lot of complaints, a lot of challenges from folks that we're not doing enough in condominiums when we really can. We really don't have the authority to do more. So we really deal with record violations, financial violations. Of course, if there's criminal issues, we don't deal with it per se. We turn over to local law enforcement, but we will investigate it from an administrative perspective. But that's really all we do. I mean, we don't regulate how a condominium runs or how the board runs. There's, of course, most of you know, there's regulations on keeping records and when the board has to report and having elections and so forth. And unless there's a violation of that type, it really doesn't affect the Division of Condominiums. Yes, sir.
If you have a violation, if the claim is submitted, about how much time does it take to get a response?
You mean to complete it? To complete the investigation?
If you have a violation of 718 and a complaint is submitted, what's the expected or just rough out the time for a response or a completion of the
okay.
When is the investigation fit?
You'll get a response pretty quickly. The investigation won't be done for months. Most of the investigations, from my experience, in the Division of Condominiums, that are serious enough to warrant an investigation like you're talking about are usually going to involve financial issues, financial allegations and those types of things. But they can be very time consuming, like any financial investigation. You got to go back and look at records, you got to check with bank accounts, it can take a long time. That being said, they also have carried quite a few cases. So it is going to take, and we shoot for 90 days, but very rarely do they get completed that quickly. There's no question about it. It takes longer than that. It could take 6 months. What can happen as well is they can go to arbitration in many cases. Arbitration will take much longer. So people will get frustrated with the investigation because it's going through the arbitration process as well, but that can take a while. It's like any court. It gets backed up. There's a lot of cases that have to go before it, and it can be time-consuming as well. So I think the most important thing we can do and try to do when we receive an allegation or complaint is to make sure you are aware of what is involved in the investigation and why it will take as long as it takes. Because the frustration I meet most often with folks is that the expectation is that when they file a complaint or an allegation, it should be resolved by the weekend. And if they don't hear anything by Friday, they're frustrated. They think you're not doing anything or you don't care or whatever the case may be. And it's not that at all. It's not that at all. But it is a slow process of investigation. It takes longer than I would like. I'll be very honest with you, and we've done some things to speed them up, and they have. We meet monthly to look at what we call performance measures and how long investigations are taking in all our areas and so forth. And the condominium investigations are moving a lot quicker than they used to. But it is a very slow, whenever you have financial investigations, it's just slow. It's a slow process. Yes, ma'am.
The credentials of the people receiving the information complaints, what are they?
In some cases they might be. In some cases they are. A typical investigation, I'm sorry, are the investigators attorneys or who is responding to the complaints? In some cases, if it's needed, attorneys will investigate them or will assist in the investigations. But most of the investigators are not attorneys or are trained investigators. For those types of investigations. Yes, sir.
Well, recently, Coleman Police had to have smoke detectors outside of each elevator door on each floor. And our elevators are open air. Is there any recourse to us having to have this privilege?
I don't know. Why is that required? Is that is?
It's in say, as far as the new law.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you ask it again, sir?
Yeah,
I won't answer it again. But
we were recently told that we must have a smoke detector outside each elevator door on each floor, and our elevators are open air. So it's actually a frivolous expense for our condominium. Is there any recourse?
Is it required by law? Is that what you're saying?
It's our understanding that it's in the latest law. Yes. State fire marshal law. The fire marshal is the one that said this.
Oh, then I would say you'd have to do it, yeah. No, I mean, I would say that if it's in a state statute that requires it, the fire marshal requires it, you're going to have to do it.
Does the state statute have to be changed by legislature?
It would have to be, yes.
To be changed?
Yes, it would have to be. That would have to be changed in the state statute then, which means going to the legislature, asking them to sponsor a bill that changes that part of the statute.
What is the open air?
What is an open air elevator? I guess you mean the hallways are open, right?
Yeah.
It's not a hall, it's not a closed hallway. It's an open like out here in the hotel here. Yes, sir.
How can owners of hotel condominiums avail themselves of the protection of 718
your department won't investigate any complaints filed against hotel condominiums for serious financial violations. So although 718 does cover hotel or resort condos, without the investigative or prosecution of your department, these developers are running roughshod over the owners. There's more than 40,000 units in Florida that are hotel condos, and we have no protection under 718. I'm told through different people in your office that the only recourse is civil action. So hundreds of thousands of dollars just to have 718 enforced is not the way to go for all those investors in hotel condos. Is there any way that the hotel condo owners can avail themselves of the protection of 718 for condo owners?
The way it is now, you'd have to just change the law. You have to change the way the statute's written. And that's, I hear that a lot, and that's one of the expectations, the reason for education and trying to communicate as much as possible about these things is sometimes the law doesn't seem to make sense, and people get very frustrated with us when we say there's nothing we can do, and it's not because we don't want to, it's not that we don't care, it's we can't, and it's and sometimes it's hard for people to understand that we can only do what the statute says. And I know some people come from other states where there's a much tighter regulation on these things. Florida doesn't have it. Florida doesn't have it. So those are the types of things I know you folks talk about when you talk about your legislative issues and what do you want to go to the legislature for and what kind of things do you want changed. That's what, those are the kinds of things you look for.
What makes it more confusing is that we pay for a license from the Department of DTR, $220 a year, and it says I actually regulate the industry. When we have a complaint of serious financial violation, we say we can't regulate. There's nothing to do.
Yeah.
We're paying every year for the licenses, but we're not receiving protection of
the service that you think you should be getting, right? I understand. Yes, sir. MyFloridaLicense.com. We'll get you to DBPR. MyFloridaLicense.com. Or you can just type in DBPR, it'll get you there too. But, yes.
I found out. Go on the website with the DBPR and put in the person's name or their license, and you can find out if any violations have been filed against them.
Correct.
Which is information that's nice to be able to find.
Oh, good. Good. We're trying to make that easier, more accessible. There's been times where some of it is a little bit cumbersome to figure out, and we'll try to make it a little bit more easy. But yes, you can go on the website if you're thinking about hiring somebody with a license or want to check on someone's license. And not only will they tell you if they have a license, they'll tell you if they've been, if any charges have been sustained against them. One thing that can be very frustrating for consumers in regards to licensed people, whatever it might be that you might be using, is that if you file a complaint. A consumer files a complaint against a licensed contractor, for instance, and you think he did something wrong, and the investigation can't prove it. There's no evidence to prove it. That accusation or charge is not public record. You'll never know it, is what I'm saying. So the only thing you will see are sustained charges, where charges have been upheld against him. And the other point I want to make, too, when I say that, people get frustrated with investigations that we do. And like I say, we're not always right. We're not always perfect. Far from it. But one thing that needs to really be clear is that if you make an allegation or a charge about something, you may be right, and they still may not find fault with that person. And the reason, what I'm trying to say is they may not be able to prove it. They still have to prove it. So they still may not have the evidence or enough evidence to prove it, because that person or the board or whatever it is, has got right to due process, which means they'll have, depending on what the charges or who's dealing with, they can go to an administrative hearing. If it's a criminal offense, they can go to court, of course. And we all know that we see it every day when in the news and so forth, and people charged criminally and then are exonerated, or it's not proven that they did it. So it doesn't mean we're saying you lied, he didn't do anything wrong. What we're saying is we can't prove that he or she did this wrong, and it's not always easy to do. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, I have a question. If I have hard copy information that will prove that the violation has been done, what kind of backup can I get to at least institute some kind of procedure that will allow me to show them when they tell me we've done it this way for 20 years, but that's not the way the law states or the document states, and they still will not listen? What kind of backup can I get from your organization?
When you say that, you're talking about the board?
The board of directors, yes. And I have hard copies of information that's violating.
If they're violating the law,
yes,
we will back you up. If we can prove it, if you have documentation,
and
you can prove it, and it's a violation of the law, we will investigate it, and we will back you up. Now, another thing that comes up that frustrates folks, and I hear about a lot, is DBPR found fault, sustained charges, and did nothing. Did nothing in what we may have done are two different things. I want to make something clear. When the statutes were enacted, and this is across the board of DPPR and all that we deal with, and DPPR's philosophy and the governor's philosophy is, you know, when somebody does something wrong the first time, you want to educate them. So if somebody did something improper in an election, they didn't understand, or they did it intentionally, we will first go in there and give them an educational letter that says, you can't do this. You have to do boom, boom, boom. And then hopefully the person will go, okay, we made a mistake, and we'll never hear from them again. And there's a process that we go through. We don't, you know, the first time someone commits an offense, we don't execute them. You know, we try to, it's just like in criminal cases, you know, the first time you commit an offense, you get a break, basically. Unless you murdered someone, you're going to get a break. You're going to get probably probation. You're going to get a chance to rehabilitate yourself. So we hear a lot that, well, you sustained charges on this guy, but you did nothing. And then when I go and look at it and investigate it, I thought, we sent him a letter to explain, an educational letter, we call it. And I realize that when you are dealing with this every day, and you're in the middle of it, you want to see the person hanging in the square, and I understand that, and I know, but we can't do that, and we shouldn't do that, and I think you all agree with that, and I know your frustrations that you've done all this work, you gave us all this backup material, and we sustained the charges, and now you're waiting to see the guy hanging in the square, or the lady, and they get this letter, and you feel like we let you down, but I think it's the right thing to do. I think it's the right process. We do hit them with heavy fines eventually. But our goal is to educate. Our goal is to educate. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, now, they have been doing this for years. This is not just one step. If you're going to say, well, this is not the way you should do it, after they've been doing that for years, still is just a warning that they shouldn't?
The first time we contact them, we will warn them. Yeah. Now, because we haven't dealt with them before. Unless we've dealt with them already, and we've already told them, stop doing this, and they continue to do it, then it moves up to the next level. If this is the first time we're being brought into these folks, and they haven't been in contact with us, and it's the first time we're telling them, hey, stop. Yeah, well, I'm depending on what it is, but most likely they're going to be told, it's not criminal or anything, they're going to be told, stop. And they're going to get a letter explaining the law and what they're supposed to be doing, and if they don't, we're going to come and get you. You know, that's what we'll do the first time. I mean, I don't deny that. I think it's the right thing to do. More often than not, people who are making mistakes are making mistakes. you know, and they're your neighbors, and they're making mistakes, and we certainly don't want to come in to your condominium association, your board, and fine you $10,000 because your board member was new and made a mistake, because that hits you. So we want to come in and say, stop doing this. This is a violation. If you keep doing it, the next thing that happens is this. The next thing that happens is this, because you're going to end up paying for it. So we try not to do that. And we do that across the board in all our licensees. We try very hard to educate and get voluntary compliance, not hit him with a hammer. I learned a long time ago in policing that enforcement is not the best tool. It doesn't work. We all see all the prisons filled up with people. It doesn't work. Prevention and education works, but it's a harder process. Sir, I've been ignoring you, and I don't mean to.
You're all very long. Suggested to you.
Yes, sir.
Well, with the good world, and I'll start to the Philippines. But your webpage, and I know how to run the webpage as well as anybody in the first year, tears down. Step a card in front. I know it's there. Even when I go back in and try to find it, this lady's asking about elections. The whole thing's stacked there for you. The webpage is just not well organized to the source where you get down, 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 down and find the real working tools. Somebody has to go to work on that because, you know, that's the public that's trying to do these things. And the forms that she's asking about are there. English and Spanish if you want it the other way. You don't have to press one to go to it either. So, you know, somebody might take the word either to the Philippines or to Tallahassee and do it. But it's doable. One other suggestion. We had a good piece of legislation last summer going through about the insurance on condominiums and what have you. And your buddy, the governor, vetoed it because some union got to him about fire sprinkler systems. Did you have anything to do with that? Is that putting it between the eyes or not?
Do I look crazy to you?
You were a cop for a while.
I was a cop for a long while.
I was just a dumb lawyer. I backed you up.
Appreciate that. Next question. I'm sorry if I'm skipping over people that were first. I don't mean to.
In the case of an election.
I did. Okay, I'm sorry. I think she was next.
My question is two-tiered. One, would you clarify something for us? You were saying that when an allegation is filed against a contractor, if it's not justified, it's removed. My understanding is that as a community association manager, if there's an allegation and it's not proven, it still stands against our record. Is that correct?
I think you're right about that, and I need to double check that, but I think community association managers are open. The allegations. I think you might be right.
Can I ask you something else while I have this piece of equipment?
Sure.
Other than the $4 per unit per year that is paid to the DBPR by our associations, how else is your department funded? And the length of time that it takes to resolve this, is that an indication that possibly they're understaffed?
Yes.
That's what funds them, $4. It's DBPR, including condominiums, are totally self-sustained. The money that we get from our licensees, the $4, pays for everything. We don't get anything from the general revenue. Everything comes from that. Are we understaffed? Yeah, you know, and that's always a hard question. It's a good question, but it's always a hard question to answer because could we do things faster if we had another 1,000 people? Yeah, you know, another 50 people. Could always use more people. But I think one of the biggest thing we need to do in DPPR that we've been trying very hard to do is to be more efficient. I think we can be more efficient with what we have. And we've changed a lot to do that. And as I said before, we've reduced the time it takes to do investigations tremendously. We reduced the time to do a lot of things. Our applications used to take an average of 50 days for licensees to get a response. It's now down to 7. So I think when we do things more efficiently, which we're working on now and we've been working on, but we can do things better. So I'm not convinced that we need more people. I want to make sure we're doing everything efficiently as we possibly can before I would say we need more people.
One more comment then. If your staff is adequate, do they get proper training? Are they knowledgeable enough so that when an association calls with a question, they can get an answer? They're not delayed?
I believe so. I think they are. Now, there may be some questions that they get that maybe they don't know the answer to right away. They all have access to people that have all the answers. They all have access to attorneys who can help them through any legal process. So if you hit them with something that they don't know, they may not know everything. You hit them with something that they don't know, they can get you an answer pretty quickly. They should be able to. They're all trained. They all have, and they all have, like I said, they have plenty of backup with skilled, experienced people around them. I think we
have. I have three questions I'd like to throw in on here. Don't give me a question.
Swallow water. I'd like to ask some questions, and it represents three of the condominium owners in our unit association presidents in our city of Cape Canaveral, and they're present, so if I don't clarify it right, they'll be here to correct me. One situation probably is common to a lot of us. This is seven units of a 68-unit condo. They're in foreclosure. Seven units are. The bank has not yet taken possession of these units, so the condo association has their attorney, as what they're working on, filing the necessary time-related procedures at a cost of $2,700 a month. Now, some have to be done in 5 days, some have to be done in 21 days, so it's a lengthy process. Here's the problem. The current owner is still renting the units and refuses to pay the maintenance fees. Included in the maintenance fees, of course, is the insurance and the right house and all these normal things. And the result is the condo is not only receiving not the dollars they're owed, but they're also paying out attorney fees, which will never come back. Is there any solution to that?
This has been probably one of the most frustrating things for us in the condo world within DBPR, especially since the economy's gotten to the point that it is. And we hear about it every single day. The foreclosures, the bank takeovers, and the issues that go along with it. It doesn't fall under our jurisdiction. There's just nothing we can do with those as long as everything's been done properly in terms of the development, the takeover, the association, whatever the case may be. But we don't have any jurisdiction over those issues at this point. It's come up a lot, I know, for future legislation to do something about this. I think we need to try to find something to do about this in the legislature this next session, because it is a huge issue, but it's not, we don't have the authority or jurisdiction to fix it, unfortunately.
So does legislation need to be introduced by some of our local legislators to correct this?
I definitely needs to be looked at. I don't know what the answer is myself. I can't say to you, we need legislation that says such and such, but there's nothing at this point that outlaws it or allows it to be regulated by DBPR. I think something needs to be done. I don't know what the answer is, but I know it's a big issue, it's a big problem. I think that it should be looked into and researched further to see if there's something the legislature can do to resolve it, yes.
How about Kelly?
No.
Sorry. And I got two more while you continue to say your voice.
Owner of a unit has passed away in a 200-unit complex. The son inherited the unit from, he lives in the Northeast. He moved, come down here, took possession, moved a friend in with him, decided he didn't like Florida, went back north. The friend's still in there. The friend's a squatter. how do you get a squatter out of there? He's got the electric bill in his name. Petey, are you in the audience? Petey Davis, she manages this complex. In any event, the man refers to himself as, I'm Ben the squatter. I don't pay maintenance fees. I don't pay rent. It's kind of bold. But we can't get him out of there. And the son says, well, go ahead and lean the unit. I don't care. I'm never coming back. How do you get the squatter out?
I'm not a lawyer. And these are really getting into the legal area that I'm not, certainly not qualified to give any advice on. And it's not that I'm trying to duck out of these. I just am not qualified to respond to them. I can tell you it's not a condominium, division of condominium issue. It's going to be a legal issue. But I certainly am, you know, far from qualified to start giving advice on how to do it. So I don't mean to be dodging your questions. I just think it would be improper for me to say something that might sound like advice, because I'm not qualified to give it.
Yeah. Do we have a lawyer who wants to give some free advice to man the suit?
I'll talk to you afterwards if you want to, but even based on the information that you have, the documents may allow for this, but it would be fairly rare. That's going to be one of those situations that I would probably have to have a lot more information. Probably
look at a lot of different things. The president and the owners are here, so they will probably see you put your jacket on so they know who to look at.
So, yeah. So stack all these questions on that table right over there for the real lawyers.
Let me ask,
I'm sorry about that joke, by the way.
Unless you want to address this specific question, do you? Okay, let me catch one more here. For I've got 17 owners of this same complex of 200 units are unable to pay their monthly fees. Now, when I say unable, this probably gives a lot of us. They bought the units in the 70s with two Social Security, thank you, Debbie, two Social Security units, checks coming in. They could handle a $54 a month maintenance fees, and they bought the unit on and on. They're happy. The homeowner now can no longer pay the assessments and the fees because one of the spouses has passed away and now there's only one Social Security check. So the maintenance fees and the assessments on 30-year roofs that don't last 30 years, as we know, has come around to bite them. They cannot pay for it. There's 14 units, so maybe more by this time. So the situation is they're homesteaded. You can't kick them out of the unit, but you can lean the unit. Okay, big deal. The homeowners association or the condo association has no revenue coming in. It's causing a rife between me and him because he says, I'm paying your maintenance fees and I'm paying your assessments. And if you can't afford to live here, why don't you move out? Probably not a department problem, but it's certainly a problem to many of these people. Where would they live?
Wait a minute, we've found the lawyer now. We've got, he can't hide, he's been trying to hide over there, but he finally spoke up. We got him trapped now. Sir?
You have to realize that under the Florida statutes, your condominium board has a fiduciary duty to the management of the corporation of the condominium. So to the extent that these are real costs for the condominium to replace the roofs, to provide for insurance and all of that, I hate to say it's one of those circumstances that if you don't have the money, you don't have the money, but these are expenses that in most of your cases are valid expenses. I'm pretty sure that most of your boards of directors are doing everything they can to keep the costs reasonably under control. Is there maybe something your board can do to even stem some of those costs back? Possibly. I don't know. It depends on how your associations run. But, you know, really, you know, there's no limit under Florida law as to what a condominium association can raise the assessments to. The only limit is they have to be reasonable based off the expenses, the common expenses under your documents. What does the association have to run? What does it have to maintain and all of that? So, it's a hard answer, but, I think the simple answer is, you know, the money has to come from somewhere, and unfortunately it comes from the owners. It doesn't come from a state fund. It doesn't come from, you know, any you know, taxpayers generally. It doesn't come from your local municipalities. That's part of the condominium ownership, is you're sharing those expenses for the building among the owners within the building. So those are my thoughts, at least.
Thanks for paying my rent.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Don't sit down yet, sir.
This is a DBPR question. We see it all the time on the news, and especially after the storms. Contractors come in, they're licensed, they get a bunch of upfront money, they leave town with the money, and the DBPR will start to investigate them. They'll actually close that business down, but the DBPR will issue them a new license a year or two later, the same person. Why do you continually let crooks get a license?
Next question. That's a pretty general question, so it's kind of hard to answer specifically. I don't know the answer specifically to the case you're talking about. I can tell you that in construction, I think you're talking about construction, you said, in construction, for instance, there's a business license and there's a contractor individual license. And a business can be a contractor if they have a contractor working for them. So sometimes what can happen is the business can get in trouble. They can be fined or closed down or license revoked or whatever the case may be. And then the corporate folks, the officers of that corporation, may move and open another business somewhere on a different name and hire another contractor. So it can be very complicated. It's not as simple as why do you hire, give the guy a license. It depends on who is the actual person holding the license and who lost their license. And without a specific case, I don't know the answers to it, but if they got their license revoked, it's unlikely that person is going to get another license. Now, could they, as an officer in a corporation in another business, possibly? Possibly. It depends. If they know that person's involved, they may not. In every single one of these professions, like construction, has a board that oversees it. In construction, it's the Construction Industry Licensing Board. And it's a group of professionals who decide who gets a license, who doesn't, what the penalties are, whether they get their license back again. And they closely scrutinize the situations. And sometimes, and obviously, there's laws that apply, administrative processes that allows them to do things or not do things, depending. But they try to keep the profession very clean. They try, if people have lost their license, they don't usually give it back to them. But there may be circumstances where they seem to be circumventing it because they're a business and they're hiring another contractor. So it's hard to respond directly to it. But they don't usually give a license back to that individual if he had an individual contractor's license and had it revoked. That would be unusual. Yes, sir.
This is a department question. In case of a faulty election and where the CAN may have played an unprofessional role in it, at which point do you consider that a slap on the wrist as in a first transgression, or do you invalidate the election?
You mean if there was an improper election, or was it illegal election? Or
improper and transgression of 718 and possibly, poor professional conduct on the part of the CAN where the election was manipulated?
I don't know how, I don't really know. Maybe our attorney can answer that. Well, I don't know what the end result is in that regard. In terms of the CAN, if it was improper or illegal activity, we would investigate that and take whatever actions are required. If it's rose to the level of criminal activity, it'd be one thing. But if it wasn't, they'd probably get the, I don't like to use the word you just used, the slap on the wrist, but they'd probably get the letter, educational letter, warning them of it. Sir, did you want to add something to that?
Well, my experience has been most of the time when you've got involved in complaints and elections, most of the time if it was found that the election wasn't proper, most of the time that educational letter will require a re-election. Most of the time. But again, that, to a certain extent, it really depends on the circumstances.
So can I ask you your name?
Brian S.
Brian S. Thank you, Brian, so much for helping out. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question.
Double closer, okay. Clarification on how we would file a consumer complaint from a process of filing a consumer complaint against a licensed contractor. Currently, we have an issue, and we're dealing with our attorney who is communicating with the licensed contractor. I guess at what point would we involve you or how, just clarify the process?
At any point. When you feel that there's something done improper, you know, whatever it might be, that you can file a complaint with us immediately. It's very easy. You go to our website. There's a place there. You can file a complaint. It will direct you on the website to where you can file a complaint, and you can file it right there. You can do it on the telephone if you prefer, or you can do it right on the website and file your complaint, and we'll follow up with you and call you and start the investigation, get the background material, and so forth. If you don't know if you have a violation, like you're not really sure if this is a violation, but this, it just doesn't seem right or whatever, you can just call us and ask us.
Okay. Well, what we have is a written inspection report of the work that was done, and it's been found faulty, and it's not, didn't fulfill the contract. And, of course, the contractor has alleged that he is done working for us. So I feel we have a complaint.
Yeah, and you could file that complaint.
Okay.
You know, how, what the end result is of our investigation, whether we can prove there's anything improper involved, or if it's just a contractual dispute or disagreement on...
If it's identified as defective work, is that considered...
Not necessarily.
Oh.
No.
Okay.
Defective work is not necessarily... Defective, I mean, it's kind of a confusing... I shouldn't give you a short answer. Defective work. If you don't like the way they put the joints together, you know, in a molding or something, that you don't think they did a very good job, no, that wouldn't be a violation. If they said that they, you know, they put drywall up in your room, you went in there and there was no drywall, or, you know, that might be. So it's, we get into a lot of discussions and many hours of investigation over those types of issues, and you just can't regulate good work, you know, compared to not so good work.
Our contract indicated that we would get a warranty, and when we had the work inspected for the warranty, they would not issue the warranty. So it's not our opinion.
It may be. You know, it's hard without seeing the contract, and that's what they'll do. They'll read the contract, they'll look at it, and they'll see if there seems to be some kind of deceptive practices on the part of the licensee or whatever the case may be. It's hard to say, but I would say file the complaint.
Okay.
We will absolutely investigate it. And when the investigator gets it, he may see something right away when you give him the paperwork to say, no, this isn't a violation. You'll know.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Sir?
Oh. Well, I hate the written down ones. They're always hard. Is Comcast Bright House license 3 of division? No. No. We don't license. I guess, I don't know, is that the FCC or... I think that's a federal license.
No.
It's not?
It's a
no-box. Oh, that's even better. Nobody regulates the cable companies? I don't know. I know we don't. I don't think anybody at the state level does. I don't know. I thought maybe a federal level.
Nobody regulates.
Is there anything? Yes, sir.
I don't have a question, but I do have a comment I think our people would like to hear. A short time ago, we received a couple of serious complaints with your letterhead on them. Registered by one of our owners. And in dealing with your department, I must say that two of your people were just outstanding in their cooperation and their communication and their resolution of these complaints. And this was Jan Chiquitka and Maria Mejia. And I'd like to commend them and thank them for the work they did on behalf of your department in resolving these complaints. And I must say that it's comfortable to deal with them. They were just outstanding and very efficient and very thorough. And thanks to your people, okay?
Thank you very much. I really appreciate that. We don't always get complimentary comments. Thank you very much. Is there anything else my partner Brian and I can try to
do? I think we have time for one more question.
I'll give you one. The questions that are being asked here this afternoon, can they be found by going to that website through an email, or the you mentioned a call, maybe 5 minutes away call? Can that kind of question be answered by your department?
A lot of it's going to be on the website. If it's not on the website, what will happen is you'll get a phone number to call through the call center. The call center will refer your call to someone with more expertise if it starts to get complicated, like you guys are throwing at me here today. If it gets more technical, they'll refer you to somebody within the condominium division. In other words, they'll tell you he will call you back, and they should call you back within 24 hours. To try to answer your question. If you're not already working with somebody, if you're working with somebody in one of the local offices, then you can just call them. But if you just have a question in general, the folks in the call center is just a huge room with 100 people answering the telephone who handle all the general kinds of questions. So if you ask a question that's fairly general about condominiums, they'll be able to give you an answer. If you get a little bit more technical, or if you give them specific cases like you're doing now, they're not going to be able to give you an answer. They don't have that level of training to be able to give you. They will say a condominium, a member of the division of condominiums will call you back and try to answer your question.
Okay, will this session be available on the SCCA website, as was the October?
Roger, would you address that question? What stuff will be available? I see it's being videotaped.
Mm-hmm.
I see it's being videotaped. Yes. Will it be available?
Yes.
The video of the movie, of the presentation is available. You send me an email with the address where you want it mailed. You send a $15 check to Space Coast, and as soon as they're done, we'll mail them out, and you will receive them within 3 days after I get them.
The audio.
The audio for this is on the website. You can listen to the entire presentation on the website or download it and put it on a CD.
Yes, sir, we do. No, she's left. We have an interim person in there now. Daniel Carroll left. Trying to remember, I'm trying to remember when that was. It's been a while, and we have an interim person in there now until the governor appoints a permanent person. Yes, she was. She got hired away from us. We lose a lot of good people that way. But the ombudsman is not going anywhere. It is still there. The position is going to still be there. In spite of all the challenges we have in the state government right now with funding programs, that's not going anywhere. Get it? Let me just say thank you so much for allowing me to be here. I apologize that I can't answer the technical questions, but I brought my expert with me, Brian. Thank you. Thank you so much for helping me. Sure. I'm going to take the written ones here. I'm not throwing them in the garbage. A lot of these are very technical, too technical for me, or just very specific to situations. I don't want to try to give you, give you the wrong answer. So I'm going to get the answers to these. What should I do with these, Roger or Harry? Should we
send them to me?
Can we just send them to you?
You send me the emails, and I'll make sure that they get distributed.
Okay, I'll do that. I'll make sure they're answered, and then you folks can post them or however you're going to do it. But they will be answered. I'm not ignoring them. I just don't have the answers for you. I apologize for that. But thank you so much for allowing me to be here. I appreciate it. Thank you for all your questions.
Just a few notes. One, thank you, Chuck Drago, for coming down. We appreciate it. And good luck with your new position. And I hope we don't lose touch with you because of it.
Not at all. Anytime.
Thank you very much. We have a board meeting, an SCCA board meeting, immediately following
meeting. We have room for about 6 guests if anybody would like to join into the meeting. Otherwise, we'll hope to see you all back here on January 23rd. Bring your questions. You should learn more about the legislative process and what's going on with state law. Thank you all for coming. I appreciate it. Have a great day.